In.
A tentative alien voice came.
Thank you for your assistance,
Thrawn said.
What is your current status? General Arrius Nakir is dead,
Kilori said.
Murdered by Jixis before he left the Whetstone. The crew have accepted me as their commander, at least for now. Can you return then to their home? I don't know,
Kilori said, sounding surprised.
I assumed you'd want to take possession of the ship. Not really,
Thrawn said.
Though we'll of course examine and disarm it before you'll be allowed to depart.
There was a brief pause. Arlani focused on the distant Kilji warship, wondering if Kilori was thinking about making a break for it before the Chiss could do anything to stop him.
Apros, cease acceleration, and yaw 180, she ordered, in case the Whetstone decides to leave early. Grey Shrike, stay with him.
On it, Admiral,
Apros confirmed.
Acknowledged, Admiral,
Zyenda said.
Well, of course, Senior Captain,
Kilori said, with a highly unconvincing enthusiasm.
That won't be a problem. I'll await your convenience.
After you leave, you'll also need to make a detour to return Pathfinder Sarge to Concourse 447.
Thrawn continued.
I trust that won't be a problem.
It would be my pleasure,
Kilori said, sounding puzzled.
But I thought... Sarge isn't lost between stars?
Not at all,
Thrawn assured him.
He's currently waiting in the outer system aboard a Parkian troop transport. He was going in and out of hyperspace so that we would know when you and Jixis were coming.
Oh,
Kilori said.
Yes, of course. Now, do you have an orbit you'd like us to wait in?
Admiral Arlani will instruct you,
Thrawn said.
We'll speak later.
He keyed off, and Arlani heard him shift back to the private Chiss broadcast.
Admiral, have you received the damage reports yet?
They're coming in now, Arlani said. It's not as bad as I was afraid it would be. Certainly not as bad as it could have been. Do you want me to talk to the Garwians and Vax? Thank them again for their help? That sort of thing?
I can do that,
Thrawn said.
And Wingoli, too, of course, for his assistance in convincing them to wait and observe. If you'll take over damage coordination, I'll set up that conversation.
Admiral, we have incoming!
Bicleon snapped from the sensor station. Arlani spun around to the viewport. Floating ahead of the Vigilant, in the near distance...
This is Admiral Dyloth aboard the Chiss Defense Force warship Venturus.
Dyloth's resonant voice boomed from the speaker.
I've been sent by the Chiss Sindicure to assess the situation.
Arlani let out her breath in a relieved huff.
This is Admiral Arlani, she said. Welcome to Sunrise.
Thank you, Admiral.
Dyloth paused, perhaps taking a longer look at the battleground.
So, what exactly did I miss?
Chapter 28.
I'm told the Sindicure has begun an investigation into our family over your dealings with Jixis,
Roscoe said, gazing unblinkingly at the man across the desk.
An inquiry running in parallel with those into the Chaff and Oofsa families.
So I hear,
Patriarch Rivlex said, staring back just as unblinkingly.
Once again, the Sindicure oversteps its bounds and authority.
I'm told the Chaff and Oofsa patriarchs have already agreed to step down,
Roscoe said.
and that the Clara Patrials have asked you to do the same.
The Patrials likewise overstepped their authority,
Riflex said.
Why exactly are you here, Roscoe?
Roscoe. Not Captain Roscoe, but just Roscoe. Rivlex's entire senior officer corps had petitioned Rivlex to reinstate her rank in the Clar family fleet. But the Patriarch wasn't going to back down over even that small gesture. He dug in his heels, defined his enemies, and was in for the long term. Unfortunately, at the moment, his enemies list seemed to include everyone in the Ascendancy who wasn't him.
This is merely a courtesy call, Your Venerante, Roscoe said. I've been offered reinstatement in the Expansionary Defense Fleet.
Congratulations, Rivlex said sourly. I trust you'll be happy scouring the chaos for new threats.
I've also, Roscoe continued, been offered a commission in the Defense Force.
And that one finally sparked a reaction. Rivlex's eyes narrowed slightly, and he seemed to draw back a little.
The Defense Force?
Yes, Roscoe said. Specifically the position of Admiral Dyloth's second officer aboard the Venturis.
She paused.
The Ground Lion Man of War, currently in orbit over Rekar.
I know where the Venturis is,
Rivlex said. His voice was still carefully controlled, but Roscoe could tell he understood the full implications of such an assignment. The Syndicure had tried to cover up the whole Sunrise incident, and for a while they'd succeeded. But now, after 5 weeks of silence, the details had begun to leak out to the general public. Rather to Roscoe's surprise, her name was being batted around nearly as often and as prominently as Aralani's, Zyenda's, and Thrawn's. Which meant that putting Roscoe into an honored and powerful post aboard the Venturis wouldn't just be a show of gratitude. It would also be a deliberate and pointed message that any sanctions Dyloth was ordered to enforce weren't directed at the Clar family as a whole, but solely at the intractable Patriarch who refused to accept responsibility for his actions.
That's all, Roscoe said, standing up. I understand you'll be meeting with the Patrials in half an hour. I imagine you'll want some time to prepare.
She nodded.
Good day, Your Venerante.
Rekar Patrial Claritu Willemt was waiting in the corridor as Roscoe left the office and headed toward the Homestead Defense Center.
Well? He asked, falling into step beside her. I don't know, Roscoe admitted. He wasn't happy about me being aboard the Venturis, but I don't know if that was enough to change his mind about resigning.
Let's hope it was, Rituvali said grimly. Turning him over to the Syndicure for interrogation and censure would be a horrible precedent to set, but keeping a possible traitor as the family's patriarch would be even worse.
He looked sideways at Roscoe.
Are you going to take the Venturis post?
Depends on if Patriarch Rivlex decides to see reason, Roscoe said. I'd rather stay with the family fleet, but our honor and position are more important than my personal wishes.
Well, whatever happens, rest assured you'll always have a place here,
Rituvali said.
Commander of the Homestead Defense Force, Captain of the Orison, whatever you want, it's yours.
I appreciate the offer, and I'll certainly consider it, Roscoe said. As regards to the Orison, though, I'd say it already has an excellent commander in Captain Ramis.
I agree, Rituvali said, a small smile playing at his lips. Though, prestige-wise, he's hardly on a level with the one they could not kill.
Roscoe frowned.
The what?
Hadn't you heard?
Rituvali asked, all innocence behind his smile.
That's what they're calling you these days on Rigar. The one they...
Yes, I got it the first time, Roscoe interrupted. How do they figure that?
There was the asteroid missile at Ornfra, Rituvali said, ticking off fingers. The sneak attack by the Grisk ship later in that same system. Then finally the Sunrise battle. You survived them all.
So did Ramis and the rest of the Orison crew,
Roscoe growled.
So why are they hanging the name on me?
Because the Klar family needs heroes right now,
Rituvali said quietly, his smile fading.
For better or worse, you're the one they've latched onto.
Roscoe sighed.
Fine, she said. But as soon as Rivlex is gone, the hero thing ends, all right?
I'll do what I can, Rituvali promised. But that isn't exactly how the hero thing works.
Then figure out how to make it work that way,
Roscoe said firmly.
The one they could not kill.
It was silly. It was embarrassing. And it was inaccurate. But she had to admit, it did have kind of a nice ring to it.
This, Zyenda said flatly, is ridiculous. How is it that I'm getting a commendation and Mid-Captain Apros isn't?
You already know the answer to that, Bakeef said patiently,
looking and sounding like a man who'd already faced enough trouble for one day and didn't really want to take on any more. Zyenda sympathized. She also didn't care. Bakeef was her only contact with the Defense Hierarchy Council, and the only way to get a message to the Council was through him. And she'd had a lot of experience lately going through things that didn't want to be gone through.
I know the official answer, Zyenda said. The Arisi co-sponsored a commendation for me, so I got one. The chap declined to co-sponsor one for him, so he didn't. And you and I both know that's nonsense. A commendation is military, and the military is supposed to stand outside family politics.
Rank, promotions, and assignments are military,
Bakeef corrected her.
Commendations are prestige. Since families always get a share of that glory, they also have to be part of the process.
And you think that's fair?
I never said anything about fairness,
Bakeef said, still far too calm for Zyenda's taste. At least he could be a little indignant about this travesty.
But you have to look at the situation from the chap point of view. Apros had in his possession at sunrise an alien artifact that by all rights should never have left the UAG vaults on Spasia.
An artifact that Thrawn walked off with, not Apros.
The point is that the records show Apros was the one credited with operating it,
Bakeef continued.
The chap patriarch evidently decided he didn't want to open that particular can of trouble by calling extra attention to it.
Zyenda ground her teeth. Time to try a different approach. Fine, she said. If a commendation is out of the question, how about a promotion? To senior captain.
Bakeef's eyebrows went up a bit.
You think Sunrise is enough to justify that?
Absolutely,
Zyenda said firmly. Because it wasn't just Sunrise. Apros had also commanded the Greyshrike at Hoxim, after Zyenda let herself be duped into joining Counselor Lecouvive's disastrous attempt to claim that useless world for the Zodlak. As her first officer, he'd handled the ship with calm efficiency, worked with her and Thrawn to pull off the deception that had prevented the Ascendancy from possibly collapsing into anarchy right then and there, and never breathed a word of the secret to anyone. For that alone, he deserved every bit of gratitude the Council could scrape together.
Interesting, Bakeef murmured. That might be possible, I suppose you're going to insist he be given his own ship as well.
That would only be fitting, Sayenda agreed. A patrol cruiser would be a good place to start. Maybe the Perala or Bokria.
What about the Grey Shrike?
Sayenda twitched, feeling like she'd just been slapped in the face. What do you mean? She asked carefully.
The expansionary defense fleet only has so many ships to go around, you know,
Bakeef reminded her.
I'm simply asking if you want Apros to have a ship badly enough to offer him yours.
I...
Sayenda broke off, the rest of her reflexive refusal sticking in her throat. She'd worked long and hard to be worthy of commanding a heavy cruiser. It was a testament to her ability and determination, and she'd handled the position with skill and integrity. Except when she'd deserted her ship and crew for the Hoxim madness. Something Apros had never done, nor would ever do. And she had the audacity to complain about family politics in the military. She took a deep breath and looked Bakeef straight in the eye.
Yes,
she said.
If the Grey Shrike is the only ship available, yes, he deserves it.
That's good to hear, Bakeef said. Still, a heavy cruiser might be a bit much for a freshly minted senior captain.
He frowned, as if suddenly remembering something, and picked up his Questus.
By the way, I received a message from him about an hour ago,
he said, scrolling briefly down the display and peering at it.
He said, if you came in demanding he receive a commendation...
He looked up, his eyes steady on Sayenda.
That I was to tell you not to worry about it. That he was content to be remembered by those who know him, who work with him, and who respect him.
He set the Questus aside.
I assume you know what that means?
Yes,
Sayenda said, feeling like a prize-winning fool.
You might have started with that, sir.
I might have,
Bakeef agreed calmly, his eyes still on her.
But the most important part of my job is the people who serve under me. Whenever I get the chance to find out how those people feel about each other...
He shrugged, and for the first time since Sayenda came in, his face creased in a satisfied smile.
I take it.
So the Grey Shrike is still mine?
Sayenda asked.
Of course, Bakeef assured her. And now that I know that one of my finest commanders strongly feels one of her subordinates is ready for his own command, I'm ready to set those wheels in motion. Especially since the Perala's commander has already informed the Council of his intent to retire.
He cocked his head.
Did you know that the Perala was Admiral Arulani's first command?
No, sir. I didn't,
Sayenda said. I think Mid-Commander Apros would consider it an honor to follow in her footsteps.
I'm sure he will,
Bakeef said.
And now, you'd best go.
He gave her another smile, this one with a hint of mischievousness to it.
I suggested he meet you in the Markenday bar in half an hour, in case you and the senior captain wanted to celebrate his promotion.
I'm glad I'm finally getting to meet you, Chiri,
Borika commented as she set a mug of cacao leaf on the table in front of Thalias and a cup of grillig juice in front of Chiri.
I just didn't expect it to be quite this soon. Neither did we,
Thalias said, looking around the ranch house's great room. Some of the chairs were different, and a cracked stone around the fire pit had been replaced, but otherwise... It looked the same as the last time she'd been here.
I assume you've been given the whole story? I have,
Borika said, taking a sip from her mug.
Sunrise and the mages. Nightmares and strange visions.
She peered at Chiri across the top of her mug.
Possibly being taken over by an alien mind.
Thalias felt her stomach knot up. Chiri, gazing into her grilling juice, didn't even flinch.
And yes, I've been asked to look into it,
Barika continued.
But it'll take time, and insight, and resources.
All of which you have?
Thalias asked hopefully.
We have the time, certainly,
Barika said, reaching over and touching Chiri's hand.
We'll have to figure out the insight and resources as we go.
So I'm going to stay here now?
Chiri asked in a small voice.
For at least a while,
Barika told her.
Skywalkers are rare enough as it is, and you now hold the record as the most unique of us all.
But the nightmares are gone,
Chiri said, looking up with pleading in her eyes.
No one's ever going to go back to Sunrise. Supreme General Bakif said so. Why can't I fly somewhere with Senior Captain Thrawn and the Springhawk?
Oh, come on, Thalias said, mock severely.
We just got off 5 weeks with him, searching the edge of Lesser Space for any sign of the Grisks. That's 5 weeks more than any of us expected.
And we didn't find them, did we?
Chiri shot back.
The Council's going to send him back. They have to send him back. Why can't we go with him?
Because you need to tell Barika and the others everything about the mages, while it's still fresh in your mind,
Thalias said, catching Barika's eye and giving her a small warning shake of her head. She didn't know if Barika had been told, but Chiri hadn't, and this wasn't the time to remedy that omission.
Fresh?
Chiri muttered.
It's not exactly fresh anymore.
You know what she means,
Barika soothed.
It'll be all right. And just think, what you help us learn could mean important things for every Skywalker who comes after you.
Maybe starting with how caregivers can do better at their job,
Thalias added pointedly. Important research or not, as long as she was being pulled into the middle of the Seeker program anyway, she was going to make sure the sloppiness that had pervaded the system for the past century got a complete overhaul.
And don't worry, I'll be here with you the whole way.
But then you won't get to fly either,
Chiri said.
That's all right,
Thalias assured her.
I really only wanted to go aboard the Springhawk so I could meet Senior Captain Thrawn again. Now that I have...
She gave Chiri a lopsided smile.
I think maybe I could use a little peace and quiet. As I'm sure you could, too,
Barika added.
But what if it takes a long time?
Chiri asked, her face screwing up.
What if... Well, you can't stay here forever.
I said I'd be with you the whole way,
Thalias reminded her as she took the girl's hand.
And I will.
Even if it takes forever?
Yes,
Thalias promised quietly, a chill running up her back.
Even if it takes forever.
It had been a long time, Patriarch Thurfian thought, since he'd been in the March of Silence. Not since his rise to the leadership of the Myth family. Not since he and Syndic Sistalmu last met to discuss more of their private agreement to bring down Thrawn. A lifetime ago. He stood beside his chosen section of wall, watching the Syndics and Speakers as they gathered in their own little groups, holding their private meetings, having their private conversations. Most of them probably wondering what a patriarch of the 9 ruling families was doing here. Let them wonder. He was just about to give up when he spotted Syndic Prime Zistalmu arrive at the far entrance. Thurfian watched as he slowly made his way through the march. And then, finally, his one-time friend was in earshot.
"Good day, Syndic Prime,"
Thurfian greeted him.
"Thank you for coming."
"I almost didn't, your venerante,"
Zistalmu said, his voice studiously neutral.
"I assumed that if you genuinely wanted to talk, you'd simply summon me to the Myth Homestead."
"I wanted to meet in private,"
Thurfian said, marveling at how many subtle insults had been laced through that single sentence, and ignoring all of them.
"This seemed a good place to do that."
"If you are hoping for anonymity, you seriously miscalculated,"
Zistalmu said.
"Even without your official robes, everyone here knows who you are."
"Good,"
Thurfian said.
"Let them see a patriarch choose to meet a rival aristocrat on that rival's ground. A little wonderment is good for the soul. Almost as good as a little humility."
Zistalmu said noncommittally.
"And which one of us is being humble today?"
"There was another circle of unity 2 hours ago,"
Thurfian said.
"We've decided what to do with Ron."
Zistalmu gave a little snort.
"If it involves putting another metal on his honor chains, I don't want to hear about it."
"No metal, no honor chains,"
Thurfian said.
"Exile."
The word clearly caught Zistalmu by surprise.
"Exile?"
"A habitable world has been chosen near the boundary between the Chaos and Lesser Space,"
Thurfian said.
"You'll be given some supplies, plus the means to hunt, fish, and farm. What he makes of his life there will be by his own choice."
"For how long?"
Zistalmu asked.
"Until some new crisis arises, and you, the Council, or the Syndicure, insist that he be brought back."
"I will never so insist,"
Thurfian said.
"Nor, I believe, will the Council."
He shrugged.
"Keeping the Syndicure out of that particular flavor of madness will be your job."
Zistalmu had clearly been trying to keep his expression polite, but strictly professional. But that comment managed to induce at least the hint of a smile.
"I think you overestimate the strength of my authority."
"Maybe at the moment,"
Thurfian conceded.
"But that will change. The Urizi are poised to rise in the estimation of the Nine, particularly with heroes like Senior Captain Zyinda on your side. The Myth, on the other hand, will inevitably suffer with people like Thrawn on ours."
He raised his eyebrows.
"Which, if you'll recall, was the end that we both ultimately expected."
"Yes."
For a moment, Zistalmu studied Thurfian's face.
"He's really being exiled?"
"He is,"
Thurfian said.
"Thrawn's story is at an end. My question today is what of ours?"
"Ours?"
"I don't claim we were ever friends,"
Thurfian continued.
"But we had a relationship once. One that enabled us to bypass family rules and rivalries and work together for the betterment of the Ascendancy. Do you think such a relationship could ever again be possible?"
"I don't know,"
Zistalmu said.
"I'll have to think about it."
"Take all the time you need,"
Thurfian told him.
"I'll be ready to speak again whenever you make a decision."
"I will."
Zistalmu paused, and another reluctant smile tweaked to the corners of his mouth.
"But next time, let's make it your homestead. As you said once, the seats and food there are far superior.
Indeed they are,
Thurfian said.
I must go now. Farewell, Syndic Prime. And once again, thank you.
Zistalmo would definitely think about it, Thurfian knew, as he made his way toward the nearest exit. Unfortunately, he would no longer be thinking in terms of taking down a single ungimbaled laser like Thrawn, but in terms of how he could exploit his relationship with Thurfian to benefit the Erizi family. But that was all right. The Syndicure's balance of power had always been precarious, and Aegixtus's plot had violently underscored that danger. Whatever Thurfian could do to reduce tensions between the Myth and the Erizi would be a step in the right direction. And if Zistalmu chose to use their relationship to try to destroy both Thurfian and the Myth? It was a risk, Thurfian knew. His family relied on him now, and he had a duty to protect it. But the risk was worth taking, because while Thurfian was a Myth, he was first and foremost a Chiss. He could only hope that no matter what Zistalmu's original plans and goals, he too would eventually reach a similar conclusion.
We thank you for coming this afternoon, Mid-Captain Samacro,
Supreme Admiral Jafosk said as the board seated itself at their table.
I'm honored to be here,
Samacro replied, feeling a twinge of uneasiness as he eyed the five men and women and their full dress honor chains. He'd never been at an inquiry hearing where there were more than three flag rank officers. Now he was facing five of them, all admirals to boot, and one of them, Supreme Admiral Jafosk himself. Whatever they wanted this time, they were clearly very serious about it. And that worried him. Thrawn had already gone through this particular shredder, disciplined by the Syndicure with a casual cruelty that Samacro wouldn't have thought them capable of. They'd thrown a bunch of crimes and infractions at him, but the most serious charges had been defying standing non-preemptive protocols by going to Sunrise and forcing Aegixtus into combat. The problem was that Samacro, Zayinda, Ar'alani, and all the rest of Thrawn's group had done the exact same thing. Did that mean they were all on the line for the Syndicure's wrath? At least the follow-up force, the warship's Patriarch Thurfian's fast-step presentation, had persuaded the Circle to authorize so that Supreme General Bakhif could send them out in Thrawn's support, had been given the laminate-thin cover of official sanction. Their commanders and officers should be in the clear. Samacro and Thrawn's primary force, not so much.
First, we wanted to again congratulate you on your performance at Sunrise,
Jafosk said. Samacro gave a small nod. Recognition, acceptance, and appreciation all rolled into a single gesture. Given the size and power of those Grisk warships, Jafosk and the Council should damn well be pleased that the Chiss forces had pulled it off. As for the deals Thrawn had made with the Pakosh, Vax, and Garweans, the Diplomatic Corps was still sifting through those, with the Aristocra looking nervously over their shoulders. Foreign alliances had never worked out well for the Ascendancy, and the Syndicure seemed disinclined to give them another try. Though in this case, they might wind up not having a choice. They'd declared Sunrise to be off-limits to Chiss ships and personnel, which was probably a good idea, and which might work in the short term. But there were still unanswered questions and unexplained resources there, not to mention the incredible wealth of the Nyx mines. And with the Magus having named Wingali as their guardian, the Pakosh were now the only path available for the Council and Syndicure to explore those resources. It was going to be an interesting tangle for the diplomats and aristocracy to sort through. Simakra was glad all he had to deal with was a single expansionary defense fleet warship. Assuming that wasn't about to be pulled out from under him.
Second, Jafosk continued, we want to officially confirm your upcoming promotion to senior captain and your assignment as commander of this Springhawk.
Thank you, Supreme Admiral,
Simakra said, noting the irony of it all. Back when General Bakhief had first taken the Springhawk away from him and handed it over to Thrawn, Simakra had resented the move like hell itself. He'd cooperated with the new commander, as his position as Thrawn's first officer required, and had ordered his officers and warriors to do likewise. But it had been strictly a matter of duty, and he'd firmly promised himself that he would never truly like the new arrangement. He'd been right. He never had. But the expansionary defense fleet wasn't about what anyone liked or didn't like. Rather, to his surprise, Simakra had slowly learned to respect Thrawn. Even more important, he'd learned to trust him. And trust was what made a warship function. Trust between the commander and his officers. Trust among the officers themselves. Knowing one another's strengths, knowing one another's commitments, was what let them charge confidently into battle. It was what let them face off against a fleet of giant alien ships without hesitation or qualm. It was especially what enabled them to win. Simakra had never liked Thrawn, not the way he liked some of the Springhawk's other officers, and he probably never would. But that didn't mean Thrawn should have had the Springhawk ripped away from him. Not even if his loss was Simakra's gain. Back when he lost his ship, Simakra had wondered if there was truly any justice in the universe. Now, to his mild surprise, he was wondering that same thing again.
And now to point three,
Jafosk said, his expression going a little odd.
During Lieutenant Commander Asmodee's testimony, he told us that at one point you told caregiver Thalias that you and Senior Captain Thrawn suspected the Nicardoon remnant had gathered in the Sunrise system for their final stand. Do you remember that conversation?
I do,
Simakra managed, fighting to keep his voice even. In the heat of everything else that had happened, he'd completely forgotten about that story. A story that had been completely made up. A story he'd pitched to Thalias so that when Patriarch Thurfian demanded to know how Thrawn had come up with such a ridiculous idea, Simakra would finally have proof that Thalias was passing confidential information to him. Only now it was Simakra who found himself trapped. Senior officers weren't supposed to spread disinformation, especially disinformation that could influence important tactical decisions. If he confessed what he'd done, he might well find the Springhawk again taken away from him. But there was an alternative. Thrawn was already disgraced in the Council's eyes. If Simakra pushed the blame for the story onto him, the whole issue would probably simply fade away, leaving Simakra completely untouched. It would be quick and easy. It would also be wrong. He squared his shoulders. His lie, his responsibility, his consequences.
Granted that it was the Grisks and not the Nicardoon who were assembling there,
Jafosk continued.
The Council was still impressed by the accuracy of the information.
He leaned forward a little in his chair.
Tell us, Senior Captain, how did you and Thrawn know?
For a moment, Simakra just sat there, feeling the universe gently turn sideways around him. Not only were they not angry, but they were actually pleased? the universe might not have much justice to it, he decided, but it did appear to have something of a sense of humor. He cleared his throat.
I wish I could tell you, Supreme Admiral, he said, putting some regret into his voice. But you know as well as I do that Senior Captain Thrawn, well, sometimes he just pulls these things out of thin air.
Yes, he does,
Jafosk murmured, leaning back again.
That's a talent we're going to miss.
Simakro nodded, suppressing a sigh. So the rumors were correct. The Council was going to demote Thrawn, possibly even below command rank. Hardly unexpected, but certainly ungracious and petty. Still, it wasn't as if that was the end. Sooner or later, the political storm would pass, and Thrawn would be quietly reinstated. The Council might sometimes have to bow to the Sindicure's anger, but it wasn't stupid.
Yes, sir, he said. As shall we all.
Bakeef had been seated in the hearing room for about 5 minutes when the observers were finally allowed in. He watched as they filed through the doorway, studying their faces and listening to the low murmur of conversation. For the most part, they seemed at ease, their expressions solemn but calm, their low voices holding that unique combination of seriousness and comradeship that marked those who'd faced death together in battle. Simakro and Thalias came in together, talking quietly with Wutro. Zayenda and Roscu, a few people back, seemed to be having a slightly more animated conversation. There were a fair number of faces Bakeef didn't recognize. Junior officers and warriors from the Springhawk, here to support their captain. They, too, had the same nonchalance as their more senior colleagues, the sense that they were here to watch Thrawn and his victory be once again recognized and, perhaps reluctantly, rewarded by the Council. Only Ar'alani seemed to recognize the darker sense floating through the hearing room air. Her gaze turned to Bakeef as she entered, her eyes narrowing with sudden suspicion and doubt, clearly wondering why he was in the observer's gallery instead of one of the tribunal members who would be entering shortly to pronounce judgment. She was right, of course. As head of the expansionary defense fleet, Bakeef should have been on the tribunal. But Thurfian had urged the Sindicure to order him to step aside. And as Thurfian was Thrawn's patriarch, the other aristocrat had deferred to his wishes. So reluctantly had the Council. The observers were all seated, and the conversation had quieted when the five admirals of the board entered through the side door. Supreme Admiral Jafosk was there. So were Admirals Dyloth of the Ventress and Air Sicaro of the Bellicose, and two others from the defense force that Bakeef only knew in passing. All five were wearing the same rigid, solemn expressions. As they seated themselves at the table, Patriarch Thurfian appeared behind them and walked over to a chair a little way from the end of the table. And the solemnity in his expression, Bakeef noted, carried more than a hint of grim satisfaction. Jafosk turned back and forth to the other admirals seated to his right and left, making quiet comments to each in turn and getting equally inaudible responses. He threw a glance at Thurfian and another, almost surreptitious one, at Bakeef. Then he turned to face forward and touched the stone on the table in front of him with his fingertips.
He will enter,
he intoned. There was a moment of silence. Then the rear door was opened, and Thrawn stepped into the chamber. He was in full dress regalia, the gold epaulets on his shoulders gleaming in the light, the honor chains and their medals clinking softly against his chest as he walked through the gallery toward the table. The four warriors accompanying him broke off to the sides as they passed the front edge of the gallery, standing rigidly as he continued on. Pakif looked around the gallery, seeing concern starting to register in some of the observers' faces as they began to realize something was wrong. Thrawn reached the patterned circle centered in the front of the table, and as he came to a halt, the five admirals rose to their feet. Pakif looked across the observers again, noting that the concern in their faces had turned to stunned disbelief. Now, finally, they realized that what was coming wasn't a commendation, but judgment. Only they still had no idea of the depth that judgment would take.
Senior Captain Mithron Yerodo, you have been found guilty of deliberate and knowing violations of Defense Hierarchy Council protocols and Chiss Ascendancy law.
Jafosk continued in the same heavy tone.
Have you anything further to say in your defense before sentence is passed?
No, Supreme Admiral, Thrawn said.
His voice was even, almost calm. But Pakif could hear the pain there, the frustration and weariness. He'd fought so long and so hard in the Ascendancy's defense, only to have his dedication turned against him.
Very well, Jafosk said. It is the will of the Syndicure and the obligation of the Council that the following sentence be passed.
He paused, and Pakif could see the conflict in his eyes. Jafosk had accepted the inevitability of this moment, and he understood the reasons for it, but that didn't mean he or any of the other officers on the tribunal liked it.
You will be stripped of your rank, and all privileges and responsibilities pertaining to the expansionary defense fleet. You will also be...
Jafosk flashed another look at Thurfian.
Removed from your status as a merit adoptive of the Myth family. You will at present remain a member of that family, but without rank.
Pakif focused on Thurfian, noting the slight twist to his lip. He'd been all for rematching Thrawn back to his original Kivu family. But Jafosk and Thurfian's own senior aide had apparently talked him out of such a drastic and irrevocable step.
The Syndicure has further decreed...
Jafosk paused, and Pakif could sense the sudden rise in the level of tension in the chamber.
That in 2 days' time, you will be taken from Chila to an uninhabited but life-supporting world, where you will remain for the remainder of your days.
A sudden disbelieving stir rippled through the room. Someone gasped, and Pakif heard the sound of someone preparing to speak. Jafosk shifted his gaze to the gallery. The full weight of his rank and experience focused like spectrum lasers through his eyes, and the sounds and movements subsided.
You will have those 2 days to set your affairs in order,
the Supreme Admiral went on, his voice emotionless.
At the appointed time, you will report to the Parala for transport to your place of exile.
He turned to Dyloth and nodded. Dyloth nodded back and walked around the end of the table, coming to a stop in front of Thrawn. And as the admirals watched with stoicism, Patriarch Thurfian watched with satisfaction, and the others watched with dismay or disbelief or anger, Dyloth proceeded to remove the honor chains from across Thrawn's chest. Another uncomfortable rustle rippled through the gallery. Again, the stirring faded away under Jafosk's stern gaze. Pakif watched in silence, feeling a lump come to his throat. Patriarch Thurfian hadn't wanted him on the tribunal, but he had wanted him to perform this part of the ritual. That request, Bakif had flatly refused. Dyloth finished and took a step back. The honor chains draped over his left palm. He hesitated a moment, and then, to Bakif's surprise, he gave Thrawn a small but respectful nod. Bakif shifted his attention to Thurfian, wondering if the Myth Patriarch had caught Dyloth's gesture. From the sudden stiffness of his expression, it was clear that he had.
"Sentence has been passed,"
Jafosk said, as Dyloth made his way around the table and stood with the other admirals.
"In 2 days, sentence will be executed."
He reached over the table and again tapped the polished stone.
"This tribunal is now ended."
The admirals filed back out the door, Dyloth stepping into his proper place in line. Thrawn's honor chains still draped carefully across his hand. Patriarch Thurfian waited until they had disappeared out the door, then rose from his chair. For a moment, he locked eyes with Thrawn, and then he, too, left the room. Thrawn turned back toward the rear door, and as the four warriors returned to escort formation, he strode back through the gallery, his face set, his eyes focused straight ahead of him. The door opened, and he was gone. For a few seconds, Bakif stayed where he was, bracing himself for the inevitable rush of confrontation and outrage. But the room remained silent and still. Apparently, everyone was still too stunned by the verdict to organize their thoughts or their voices. But that would come, Bakif knew. In time, it would come. Quietly, he stood up and made his way through the gallery to the door, feeling disbelieving and hostile eyes on him the whole way, and wondered how much angrier they would all be if they knew the judgment and the exile had been Bakif's idea. Chapter 29. It was seldom, Ar'alani thought to herself, that she'd seen a single word that could be packed with so much hostility, hopelessness, and sheer injustice. But this one managed all that and more. Exile. She looked up at the two men sitting across from her. Supreme General Bakif, seated behind his desk, was wearing his usual neutral face, with nothing there for her to read. Thrawn's face, as he sat silently at the desk's other front corner, was mostly unreadable, with a hint of pleading in his eyes. Pleading for understanding, perhaps? Pleading for sympathy? He'd better not be pleading for forgiveness, Ar'alani thought darkly. She wasn't in the mood to forgive someone who hadn't done anything wrong. She focused on Bakif.
"This is wrong, sir," she said. "Completely and totally wrong. Senior Captain Thrawn deserves a promotion, a new honor chain, and the gratitude of every single one of the 9 and the 40.
"So what exactly does that make this sentence of exile?"
Bakif asked mildly.
"What do you see in it?"
"Resentment," Ar'alani told him. "Embarrassment."
She looked at Thrawn.
"Revenge."
"Good,"
Bakif said.
"Because that's exactly what the Sindicure intended when they approved it."
He paused.
"And that's exactly what we want them continuing to believe."
Ar'alani frowned, focusing a little harder on Thrawn. She'd been right the first time. The pleading was indeed for understanding. but not understanding for his situation. Understanding for something else entirely.
Well, that clears that up, she said. Would you like to scrape a little more dirt off the viewport for me?
There was no other way,
Bakeev said, his voice quiet.
The Sindicure was looking for a scapegoat, someone to blame for what happened at sunrise.
What happened at sunrise was the salvation of the Ascendancy,
Aralani said bluntly.
You know that as well as I do.
A temporary salvation, at least,
Bakeev agreed.
And I know that many in the Sindicure share that view. But agreeing with it and accepting it are two different things. The Ascendancy's unity had been fractured, with serious tensions lingering within the Nine and the 40. Blaming everything on Thrawn was the only way to offer closure, and to allow all the aggrieved parties to save face and regain their honor. The only way to put the Ascendancy back together.
They should have found another way,
Aralani growled.
If they wanted a scapegoat, they could have picked any one of us.
They did,
Thrawn said quietly. Aralani frowned at him.
What?
He means they did pick,
Bakeev said.
Only they picked all of you.
Aralani looked back at the Supreme General.
I don't understand.
Bakeev sighed.
There was a sizable percentage of the aristocracy who wanted to bring charges against every commander and every senior officer in Thrawn's core group,
he said.
You, Wutro, Samakros, Ienda, Rosku, he snorted. There were even some who wanted to charge Thalias and Cheery. The point is that by putting Thrawn at the focus of their anger and embarrassment, we could persuade them to leave the rest of you alone.
Think of it as a game of tactica,
Thrawn suggested.
Supreme General Bakeev has sacrificed his night dragon in order to protect his ground lion and whisper birds.
Wait a minute!
Aralani fixed Bakeev with a hard stare, as one more part of this insanity suddenly became clear.
This was your idea?
It was,
Bakeev said, holding her glare calmly.
The Grisk threat isn't over, Admiral.
You know that.
We need you and the others, the people who've seen Thrawn in action and learned from him, to continue in your positions of authority, if the Ascendancy is to be protected.
And so you sacrifice him to the aristocracy?
Aralani demanded.
You send the Ascendancy's best protector to uselessly waste the rest of his life on some lost planets?
Well, not exactly.
Bakeev gestured to Thrawn.
Senior Captain, this part was your idea.
As I'm sure you know, Thrawn said. After the Sunrise confrontation, the Council sent the Springhawk to the edge of Lesserspace to see if we could gather any clues as to the Grisk's location.
And to look into those other names you got from General Yiv,
Bakeev added. Aralani nodded. To search for Grisks and other threats, and probably also to get Thrawn out of sight while they figured out what to do with him. Again.
Did you find anything?
She asked.
Not about the Grisks or Yiv's other names, no,
Thrawn said.
But we did learn one bit of potentially disturbing news.
I know you read Senior Captain Thrawn's earlier report after his encounter with General Anakin Skywalker of the Galactic Republic,
Bakeev said.
At the time, the Republic was embroiled in a war with a faction calling themselves the Separatists. According to a group of refugees the Springhawk encountered, aliens calling themselves Nymoidians, that war has ended.
Congratulations to them all,
Arlani said.
Which side won?
To hear the Nymoidians tell it, neither, Thrawn said. The Separatist forces were apparently crushed, or perhaps simply collapsed when their leadership was destroyed. But the Republic also disappeared, with a new government rising in its place that calls itself the Galactic Empire.
Congratulations on that, too, I suppose, Arlani said. What does that mean for us?
It was clear from my conversations with General Skywalker that the Republic was weak and fragmented, Thrawn said. His leadership included many different factions and alien viewpoints, and it was continually being pulled in different directions. The Empire, in contrast, is unified under a single man and a single vision.
Sounds like General Yiv and the Nicardoon,
Arlani said with a shiver.
Are we thinking the Empire could be a problem down the road?
It could, Bakeev said. But it could also be a solution.
He waved a hand toward the sky.
The Grisks are out there somewhere, Admiral. And they're an enemy like none we've ever faced before. Warships and weapons we can deal with. But alien races who can subtly strike at the Ascendancy's very heart and turn us against one another are something new. We've turned back this assault, but we know there will be more to follow.
And so Senior Captain Thrawn pretends to go into exile,
Arlani said, finally seeing the whole picture.
But instead, he travels to this Empire to consult with its leader?
That's our hope, Thrawn said. Though it naturally can't be quite so obvious. The Sindicure would never permit direct contact with an alien government. He smiled faintly. Certainly not for me, diplomatically useless agent, such as myself.
You saw how violently they reacted to a simple one-time battleground alliance with the Bakash, Vax, and Garvians,
Bakeev reminded her.
This would send them into a hyperbolic trajectory.
Yes, Arlani murmured. That part, at least, didn't require additional explanation.
So what's the plan? Thrawn sits around on some deserted planet until this Empire bumps into him?
Basically, yes,
Bakeev said.
Really?
Arlani asked, frowning. That had mostly been a joke.
Out of all the systems and habitable planets out there, you're just going to pick one? And hope for the best?
It won't be quite at random, Thrawn assured her with a smile. We were able to find and map out a few trade routes and communications networks that have given us insight as to the most likely places.
And we'll have someone watching from a discreet distance,
Bakeev said.
If no one appears within a few weeks, we'll pack him up. Pick another planet and try again.
Sounds a bit iffy to me,
Arlani said.
And if the Empire does find you, what then?
If General Skywalker survived the war, I'm quite sure he'll remember me,
Thrawn said.
If not, surely someone will recall him fondly enough to grant me a hearing.
And then?
I'll gather whatever information I can about the Empire, then return and discuss my findings, quietly, of course, with Supreme General Bakeev and the Council,
Thrawn said.
Between all of it, I don't expect to be gone from the Ascendancy more than a few months. A year, perhaps, at the most.
I hope it works,
Arlani said.
Regardless, I appreciate you both letting me know what's really going on.
You're welcome, Bakeev said. But don't fool yourself into thinking it was entirely altruistic.
You're one of the most prominent and celebrated members of the Expansionary Defense Fleet right now. We couldn't have you running around making noise and demanding that Thrawn be brought back from exile.
Arlani gave him an innocent look.
Would I do something like that?
Absolutely, Bakeef assured her. And now, Thrawn and I need a few minutes to finalize the last details. He'll be traveling aboard the Peralla. I'll let you know his departure time in case you wish to see him off.
Thank you. I would.
Arlani looked at Thrawn as she stood up.
I'll say my goodbyes then, Thrawn. Don't you dare leave before I get that chance.
I won't,
Thrawn promised.
That's not what friends do.
And so at the end, as it had been at the beginning, it was just the two of them, Bakeef and Thrawn, contemplating the past, looking to an uncertain future. Bakeef watched silently as Thrawn scrolled through the Council's final equipment checklist, nodding in satisfaction at each item. It was just as well, Bakeef thought distantly, that Arlani's deal for General Yiv's own exile had given them some experience in codifying the resources a castaway needed to survive. Unlike Yiv, of course, Thrawn wouldn't be gone forever. But it had to look to any prying Aristocra eyes that he was. Finally, Thrawn looked up.
This will do nicely, he said, handing back the Questus. Thank you.
I think the thanks should all be going in your direction,
Bakeef said. Thrawn shrugged.
I did what was necessary, as do we all.
Yes, Bakeef murmured. An odd thought. When you first contacted Patriarch Lamiov about taking an item from Vault 4, we both assumed you meant the item. You can imagine my relief when it turned out to be the gravity well generator and not the Starflash.
Though it might have been,
Thrawn said evenly.
If I'd thought Starflash was necessary to destroy Jixis and the Grisk threat, I would have used it without a second thought.
Even if it meant the destruction of Sunrise?
Thrawn's eyes seemed to focus on something in the distance behind Bakeef.
My job is to protect the Ascendancy and the Chiss people, sir, he said quietly. Whatever it costs to achieve that goal, I will pay it.
A chill ran up Bakeef's back. Whatever it costs? Something had happened at Hoxim. Something Thrawn had been involved with that had never been revealed to him, the Council, or the Sindicure. Something evidently important, or explosive, or damning. Senior Captain Simacro knew what it was, as did the rest of the Springhawk's bridge crew. So did Thalias and Ciri. Senior Captain Zyinda apparently also knew. And if the reports of a long conversation between her and Arlani were true, it was likely that the Admiral also knew the truth. But none of them were talking about it, and none of them were likely to do so, whatever the costs might be to their own careers. Did Thrawn even recognize the depth of loyalty he inspired in those who worked with him? Knowing Thrawn, probably not.
I understand,
Bakeef said, as he put away his Questus.
I suppose you're ready, then. I have to admit, though, that I'd always looked forward to seeing how you looked in Admiral White. I suppose I'll never get the chance now.
You were never likely to in the first place,
Thrawn said dryly.
No one here would ever make me an admiral.
I suppose not,
Bakeef said.
One other thing. Two, actually.
He opened the desk drawer beside him and lifted out the four-point pinwheel medal that had been given to Thrawn so long ago at the Stybla honoring ceremony.
Supreme Admiral T'Fosk recovered this before your other medals and honor chains were put into storage, he said, handing it across the desk. We thought you might like to take it with you.
Thrawn took the medal, cupping it in his palm, and for a moment gazed at it in silence and remembrance. Then he looked up and handed it back.
Thank you, he said. I prefer you keep it safe for me, if you don't mind. The path I'm on may turn out to be rockier than expected, and I'd hate to lose it.
As you wish,
the Keef said, taking the medal and returning it to the drawer.
And no, I don't mind at all, but would consider it an honor. This next item, though, I think you should consider taking with you.
He paused, recognizing even in that moment that he was being overly dramatic, then pulled out a distinctive double ring.
Caregiver Thalias asked me to give this to you,
he said, again handing it across the desk.
Wingali Foar Maroksa wanted you to have it as a token of gratitude from himself, his subclan, and the Pakian people.
For another moment, Thrawn stood motionless, a series of emotions playing across his face. Then, with the same reverence he'd shown the Stybla medal, he took the ring.
I shouldn't accept this,
he said, his voice oddly hesitant.
Wingoli and the Pakosh did far more in their own defense and the defense of Sunrise than I did.
He took a deep breath and carefully slipped the ring onto the two middle fingers of his right hand.
But in the spirit that it was given, I must with humble gratitude accept it.
Indeed,
Akif said, feeling a small flicker of relief. He'd not been looking forward to having to tell Wingali that Thrawn had rejected his people's honor, not to mention having to face Thalias while delivering the same message.
Then I believe we're finished here,
he continued, checking his chrono.
We have time for one final meal together, if you wish.
If you don't mind, I'd like to eat alone,
Thrawn said.
There's a bistro where Thras and I used to meet. I'd like to spend my last evening on Sheena, remembering him.
He gave Bakif a small, melancholy-edged smile.
He explained to me once that theatrics could be used either as a diversion or as a way of focusing an opponent's attention elsewhere. I thought about that when you first presented your exile plan to Supreme Admiral T'Fosk and me, and noted how it combined both of those aspects. My brother would have been proud.
I believe he would have,
Bakif said, inclining his head.
That is a high compliment indeed. Thank you.
You're welcome,
Thrawn said, rising to his feet.
I'll be back soon.
Take all the time you want,
Bakif said.
We'll be ready when you are.
Thank you.
With a final nod of his head, he was gone. For a moment, Bakif gazed at the closed door, Thrawn's words echoing through his mind. Whatever it costs to achieve that goal, I will pay it. Bakif could only hope that whatever that final cost was, it wouldn't be impossibly high. Epilogue.
All beings begin their lives with hopes and aspirations. Among these aspirations is the desire that there will be a straight path to those goals. It is seldom so, perhaps never.
Sometimes the turns are of one's own volition, as one's thoughts and goals change over time. But more often, the turns are mandated by outside forces. It was so with me. The memory is vivid, unsullied by age. The five admirals rising from their chairs as I am escorted into the chamber. The decision of the Ascendancy has been made, and they are here to deliver it. None of them is happy with the decision. I can read that in their faces. But they are officers and servants of the Chiss, and they will carry out their orders. Protocol alone demands that. The word is, as I expected, exile. The planet has already been chosen. The admirals will assemble the equipment necessary to ensure that solitude does not quickly become death from predators or the elements. I am led away. Once again, my path has turned. Where it will lead, I cannot say.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars: Thrawn Ascendancy, Book 3, Lesser Evil, by Timothy Zahn. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Edited by Justin Kilpatrick. Post-production and sound mixing by Paul Goodrich at Merlin Studios. Star Wars: Thrawn Ascendancy is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007. Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.